and Fritz podcast number 37.
Yeah.
You're counting now. You've got the tools.
I do. So here we are, new podcast. It's been a couple weeks. A lot has happened.
It is not our fault. It's been a couple weeks.
It's been illness and life just getting in the way.
It's been more than what I've told you. I've actually been saving some of this for the podcast.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. Well, let's start with that. What has been going on with you, Mr. Fritz?
It all happened, of course, with the Oscars. Everything's gone downhill since then.
This is true.
This is the road to us doing this podcast. So Oscars hit, right? Everyone's bored out of their minds, right?
Uh-huh.
So anyways, we're supposed to do one the Wednesday after the Oscars happen. In which case, you, sir, then became ill.
I did.
It just
hit me Tuesday night, just laying around, laying on the bathroom floor. And then Wednesday, just in bed, whole day.
Mm-hmm. Couldn't even get up.
Yeah, and even Rachel didn't realize the extent of how sick I was. She thought I was like, oh, I don't feel very well, get up around 2. But no, I was in bed like all day, feeling like hell. So that
now, any diagnosis as to your illness?
I think Rachel was just like, you're fucking sick.
Did you have like a fever or anything like that?
I had a bit of a fever, and I don't even remember what else was wrong with me. I was dry heaving, but not actually vomiting.
Okay.
You know.
Well, because we're getting to my illness here in a second.
Because clearly it was connected.
Well, yeah, we're doing, you know, cross state. You know, through Skype. We're not doing diseases through Skype.
Exactly.
So anyway, so we're like, okay, let's reschedule for, Saturday. That sounds good. I had Saturday night available. You had Saturday night available. I'm all ready. I got my computer ready to go. Then all of a sudden you text me and your power goes out?
My power went out right as I was setting up to get ready to do the podcast. Just power out, and it's lightly drizzling outside, no really crazy weather, just boom, blackout, whole block.
Now, and then I texted you and I was like, what do you mean, like a power outage? Like is the whole city? And you're like, oh no, it's pretty regular. Like, so you have power outages pretty regularly there, apparently.
Yeah. The when we first moved here, it was constant, all the time. We'd just be sitting there and power would go out for like 10 minutes.
Now, whereabouts are you for maybe our new listeners who might not know?
We're in Pittsburgh, not in the city, but in the outlying area. But for some reason, even though we're not actually in the city, our address is Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh, yes, not lying.
So third world country, which cannot afford electricity and or transformers.
It's insane. Yeah. We don't get as many movies here either as Detroit does.
I can't even picture that because Detroit is not known for a mecca of get it all first.
They get it faster than Pittsburgh. I think what it is if you look at the map, you got your New York and you got your Philly, and then you have Cleveland, Detroit, and they tended to hop right over Pittsburgh.
So Detroit sucks until you've been to Pittsburgh.
Yes.
That's the way it rolls.
That's really a good way to put it.
Now keep in mind I do overnights on the weekend as well. So part of my job, I do traffic reporting. Well, I was, you know, kind of bummed out. I was like, shit, we got to get the podcast done, you know. So we're like, yeah, we'll just, you know, maybe we'll try to do it tomorrow or something like that. And so we're gunning for Sunday. Well, I was on my way to work. And blizzard. So you're having a power outage, and we're having a blizzard here in Michigan, into which case, basically what happened was on my truck, my shocks fell off the back.
Whoa.
So I had no shocks.
Whoa.
And my wife, her car, her tires were completely bald. So I was like, okay, got to drive in a snowstorm. Do I take the wife's car with bald tires, or do I take the truck with no shocks?
Oh, man.
So I went with the wife's car. And went right into a ditch. So I didn't tell you this, but I spent all Saturday night after hearing about the power outage in a ditch in the middle of I-94, right by exit 257 there.
You didn't get far at all.
No, No, not at all. Which is, that's only maybe a mile or two away from my house. But here's the kicker, right? Is I wanted to leave the house early because the drive to get to the radio station is roughly about an hour on a good day, right. Solid hour away from my house. So I'm like, okay, I got to make sure I leave early in enough time. So I was in a rush, left early, left my wallet at home. Now, I don't know if any of you know this, but in order to get out of a ditch in Michigan, a tow truck driver has to pull you out. Tow truck drivers require some sort of compensation order to let you out of said ditch.
No.
Now, luckily enough, I am a AAA member.
Yeah.
So I called up my wife, and she gave me the AAA number. I jotted it down, called AAA. They sent the tow truck out there. By that time, the police showed up, and they were just chilling with me because by law, that's what they have to do. So I felt bad. Tow truck guy comes out like an hour later, and basically the rule of thumb is he towed me out, and then I had to drive to a gas station, and he goes, well, basically since I took my wife's car, everything in the car, all the documentation said Amber Fritz. So that he goes, well, there's no way of proving that this car in any way, shape, or form belongs to you, so I have to impound it.
What?
He goes, that's the rule. He goes, you could have just stole this car. He goes, that's the rules. He goes, I can't do anything about it. Well, for some reason, out of the blue, my expired from when I was 16-year-old driver's license was in Amber's glove box.
Whoa.
So I pull it out, give it to the guy, and I go, will this do an old expired driver's license? He's like, it would do, but it doesn't look like you.
What?
No joke, dude. The guy didn't. I was sitting there in the snow trying to convince this old tow truck driver in his truck in between a carton of Marlboro Lights trying to argue him that me at 16 years old is me now. I was almost ready to shave my beard off.
Oh, my God.
Just to prove that it wasn't me. So anyways, sure enough, guy let me go, put it on my AAA, and I got to turn around and go home.
Why would he – I mean, in the blizzard, why would he even – part of me is kind of like, I know you're doing your job, but at the same time, does he have to do his job that hard?
Well, the tow truck driver was pissed at me. He was pissed that I didn't have my license or anything at me. Like, he was very irritated that we had to go through these necessary measures. He's like, I don't want to tow your car. He's like, get your wife down here to bring your ID or something because I don't want to tow this car. You know, he didn't want to do it. So, but it all turned out well, I guess, in the end, until then Sunday.
Oh, no.
Which we were trying to do the podcast Sunday, but then I had a family function. Then I had to work. I go to work, and then I get violently ill.
There we go.
Like, so violently ill, stomach flu. My wife had to come pick me up from work. And, yeah, dude, it was bad. I've very rarely been that sick in my life. I couldn't drink water. It would just come right out.
Whoa. You can't even drink water. That's
no,
sick.
No, water was making me sick. The thought of drinking water was making me sick.
The thought of water making you nauseous. That's a new one.
Water had a smell for some reason. And I'm still like, I'm glad.
Are you sure it wasn't Port Huron water?
Brita filtered water.
Port Huron water. Oh, man.
So anyways, that's all the steps that we've had to go through. And we just wanted to do a stupid podcast on the Oscars.
And now here we are. The Oscars are long over.
And we can't even talk about the Oscars. They were so stupid and boring.
They were terrible.
I mean, it's hard to think of an offense once again. It's like how good the network was. It was just like the social network. I mean, it's like, what do you say? It was good. You know, it was the Grammys, they were boring. Or the Oscars. Man, I'm saying all the wrong stuff. You can tell I'm sick. I'm trying to think of even highlights that stuck out in my mind, except for the old guy who took up way too much mic time.
Kirk Douglas. Douglas came out, and at first everyone felt really awkward. And then he kept talking, and then he kept talking, and then it became kind of funny. And then after that was all said and done, about an hour later, you're like, man, they really should bring Kirk Douglas back out. That guy was great. and, you know, I mean, there are a lot of things that were wrong. I think somebody pointed out that basically you had Anne Hathaway playing the person that you knew in high school, who was like the really giddy class president, and Then you had James Franco as the stoner funny guy in the back of the room in high school.
Was he high? Was he high?
No, he wasn't high. I think he was completely exhausted and apathetic.
Because if you ever watch Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, yeah.
That's the same face. He has not changed his face.
No. He hasn't changed his face. No. I don't think he was high. We watched this interview he did right before the show, and he looked like he wanted to take a nap. Like, he just was like, I'm filming a movie, I'm going to school at NYU, and now I'm hosting the Oscars. I really could go to sleep right now.
I thought it was the same thing as the stupid, the Jim Brewer book, like, I'm not high, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, of course Jim Brewer looks high. This is the way his eyes are. I don't know. I thought that was pretty stupid, but...
Yeah, well, that seemed to be a really easy, like, oh, James Franco was high. I'm like, nah, I don't...
Well, what the hell else was there to talk about, for Christ's sake? The awkwardness between Justin Timberlake and What's-Her-Face?
Oh, yeah. Well, all that scripted stuff was garbage.
There was inside jokes going on that wasn't funny in the first place.
No.
I don't know.
No. Now, the only good stuff was maybe the auto-tuning the movies. Honestly, I'm trying to remember something I didn't enjoy. I mean, the only good stuff was, I don't know, nothing. There, I said it. Nothing good happened. Melissa Leo and Christian Bale won for The Fighter, in which that movie's terrible and they're terrible in it, but whatever. I'm the only person that thinks that.
I'm getting pretty furious that you dry heaved, I threw up, you lost your power, and I crashed my car just to say this.
Yeah, this is... Yeah. All right. Let's move on from the
Oscars.
Oscars, whatever. You were a horrible disappointment and you don't make for good podcast chatter.
That is ball-less.
Yes. All right. Let's talk about something that is current, that is exciting. New Radiohead, King of Limbs.
Came out of nowhere.
They were like, hey, new record, Friday, deal with it. And we did. What do you think?
This is what I was sitting here doing. I'm sitting here and I wake up and I go, And I was previously subscribed on YouTube to Radiohead's channel because they put up the Scotch Mist stuff from their In Rainbows album. So, you know, they did some live video stuff on there. And, you know, official Radiohead stuff posting is always rare and always entertaining. So I had that subscribed on there. And it was a video. And I was thinking it was something like that. What was that single they put out? Jeez, oh, Pete, it must have been like half a year, maybe a year ago. It was that song about the World War One veteran, the last World War One veteran that died.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Harry Patch, in memory of.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a song like that, but I was like, oh, no, this is like a full video. Wait a minute, that's Tom York dancing? Wait a minute, this song's blowing my mind here? What's going on
here?
Album's out right now? I can go to Radiohead and download it? Like, I couldn't believe it. And I got to go to work, and my buddy, who's gigundo Radiohead fan, I'm like, so, new Radiohead? And he's like, what are you talking about, man? Like, no clue. And we're all, oh. And I must say, like, it was whenever there's a new Radiohead album, I just have to stop and listen. So that's what I did. Like, I called my buddies that night, and I was like, dude, we're going. We're sitting in a car. We're sitting at someone's house. We're doing something, and we're just sitting and listening to this album. And that's pretty much what I did. Sat in my truck in Rochester and just sat there, grooved on it. And basically, like, you know, first couple of tracks, we're kind of talking in between, like, oh, yeah, what about this? What about that? Basically, halfway through the album, started getting quiet, shut the hell up towards the end of it, and we were just blown away. I love that album.
These guys, I just said with Radiohead, it's like, can't stop, won't stop. Every record now, it's just... It's us again, and we're great. You're welcome. That's every Radiohead record. This one, super great. Rachel and I actually listened to it when we were making dinner, and I was like, "Hey, this first rest, this record is Dance Party," and you know, I mean, that wasn't. And it was like that was like first listen. Okay, go in, listen to the second time. Like the first half, love the second half. I'm at the point now where if the Radiohead said, listen, we're going to do a full album of ballads, I'd be like, great. That's a great idea. Because they have mastered their ballad. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember thinking, I mean, we're going to go back to the Bends. I thought I didn't I mean, now I like the ballads on that album. But at the time, I remember thinking Fake Plastic Trees and Street Spirit Fade Out were not my favorite tracks on the album. They were slower. They were the ballads of, like, the rockier ones.
Yeah.
But post Kid A, their ballads are just out of this world.
All of a sudden, Nice Dream makes a lot more sense. And
exactly.
You're like, hey.
Yeah. Now I'm really in tune to it. Maybe it's because I'm older, more mature. I don't know. But, I mean, a track like Pyramid Song, stuff like that. And now, I mean, yeah, the last half of King of Limbs, just incredible.
Well, now, this is gonna shock you.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not letting this album get off that easy.
Okay.
Because I love the album, yes, but at the same time, I'm pretty disappointed.
Okay. I feel like you're switching gears from a minute ago when you were like, we're in the car, we listen, we're blown away. But it sucks.
Because I was also blown away by In Rainbows when I first heard it. And In Rainbows isn't one of my favorite Radiohead albums.
Really?
I must say that I've gone back and listened to In Rainbows recently and have a better appreciation for it than I have over the last couple of years. I kind of shelved that one kind of quick from them. But I'm still... I guess the only thing that I think is missing from this is... hooks.
Really?
Yeah. I just feel like there's not really anything that, like, the songs are all really good and I can go back and listen to them and I really like them, but they just don't grab me in, I guess, as much. And like their songs have lost a lot of their anthem quality that they used to have. And I think back to primarily, I guess, the two biggest ones are OK Computer and Kid A, where their songs were like very, I guess, almost like anthem-like. You could sing along to them. And I'm not just judging an album based on whether or not I can sing along to them. But I guess the lyrical quality and the vocal quality were what I wasn't too impressed with. I feel like he's just doing a falsetto. Just basically, I liked when Tom York was singing over the stuff, not when Tom York was a part of everything.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've kind of taken it as post-OK Computer, Kid A onward, they've been treating Tom York's voice as just another instrument into the mix as opposed to the main part of the mix.
And I've read interviews and stuff like that. I have Meeting People Is Easy and stuff like that. And I know that that's what Tom York was trying to create. That's what Tom York wants.
Yeah.
He doesn't want it to be a 3.5-minute pop song. You know, they don't want that structure. And at the same time, that's why I love Radiohead for that. And I guess maybe a little bit is the previous albums were also drastically different, and this kind of almost feels almost like more of the same.
I don't know. I feel like Radiohead. I've never bought the idea that every record is a reinvention of the last one, because, I mean, Amnesiac was, you know.
Just music a spinoff of Kid A.
Yeah, music from recorded during the same time as Kid A, so they have a similar sound. Hail to the Thief, which was, you know, supposedly the return-to-form guitar rock record, doesn't really sound too far from OK Computer. In Rainbows sounded like a merger of those sounds, but it's still... I mean, everything just sounds like Radiohead, and I guess... if you're expecting them to put out a record that doesn't sound like Radiohead but still does in a sort of weird, intangible way, this record is not a game changer in the way that a lot of the other records were. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe that's – and you know what? I mean, I would never say this probably to Tom York's face. You know what I mean? That's what I want. You know what I mean? But when a band has given you that – you know, a couple of times, you know what I mean? You mm-hmm. kind of get spoiled a little bit,
little
you know?
Bit. I could see what you mean. I mean, that once you've raised the bar, so it's kind of like the Jay-Z problem that Lauren and I have, except Radiohead are not ever put out an album as bad as any of Jay-Z's. Matter of fact, I don't think Radiohead have any bad albums. So there you go. I mean,
Pablo Honey. Come on, no one considers Pablo Honey.
When reading about the new Radiohead, I've read a lot of people who have apparently come out and decided to let everybody know that they really like Pablo Honey and they've been a supporter for a long time. I've never met anybody in real life. Just people, just journalists and critics that I've read.
No, strap them to a chair, put that record on, and they'll be clawing, they'll be begging you to stop because the album is not good. And Radiohead is easily top bands. I mean, gotta be number two. And because that's the thing is, I love this album, but it's not better than OK Computer. It's not better than Kid A. Oh. And I feel like with Amnesiac, I wasn't expecting that. I let that one go because I treated that more as a B-sides. But I still really love that album too.
Right.
B-sides, rarities, whatever have you. And then Hail to the Thief, I thought was close. I really thought that album was close. I really like that one a lot more than anyone else does. But I felt that one was close, and then I felt like they got further away within Rainbows, and then close again, but just not. I want an over the top, you know, just game changer.
For me, I remember thinking that Hail to the Thief, when it came out, obviously super excited, new Radiohead, but it sometimes felt like a slog. And it's one of the few Radiohead albums that I get that feeling from. Like, you'll have a song you really like, and then, you know, whatever, just kind of a slogier one. And I don't have that within Rainbows. I don't have that with the new record. I don't have that with OK Computer, Kid A, Amnesiac. You know, that's the only record that I would say is like their hard or difficult one. And even then, if I was in the car and somebody's like, I'm going to put on a Hail to the Thief, I'm not going to be like, no, not that record, please, anything but, no. I'll be like, really, that one? Okay, fine. Surprised you have it in your CD player. But this one, I would say that this record, it's a softer, more quiet record. It's not trying to be a game changer. It's just, I mean, it's short too. I think it's like the shortest Radiohead record. It's like 37 minutes.
You know, that was, you know what? This is a whole nother point, because I'm really glad you brought this up, because I completely forgot about this. I was pretty eked purchasing that album. Coming from the stature before of Pay What You Want, again, this is Radiohead delivering and then coming up short the next time, is basically, I felt it was a little steep to pay $9 for 8 songs. Because I went straight to Radiohead.com, click, went over there, and I downloaded it, and they said $9 for 8 songs. And I said, what? I thought it's $1 a song. That's what Steve Jobs said it at.
Well, that's more of like, I mean, well, here's the thing. You can go to iTunes and get a new album, and it'll be $1 a song, or they'll have it bundled down to buy the whole album for cheaper than $1 a song, because the album has 12 songs on it, that's $12, but they could be selling it for $9, $8. And they're not doing, I mean, the thing, they weren't offering it, you know, a la carte, they were offering it whole album or nothing.
Yeah.
And also, the sound quality, I mean, when they did the thing before with the Pay What You Want, you were only getting like 160K byte quality MP3s. With the new one, you were getting 320 quality. And
well, MP3, but then they charged you $14 if you wanted Wave.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it was $14 if you wanted Wave quality, $9 if you wanted MP3 quality.
Well, I don't know. I can't really go in for the price thing. I mean, here's the thing. As long as they're charging less than 15, because that's my cutoff. If I'm in a store and I see a CD costs 15, I'm like, no, you've gone too high.
Now, they do have very cool limited editions coming out with vinyl with all these little they describe it very odd. It's got basically all these little pieces of artwork in it. Like, I heard like hundreds of them or something like that, crazy. But so they do have like these vinyl where you can purchase it, and it's going to be special limited editions, and they're going to have a retail CD of it.
Right.
And That's fine. Like, if it was the, if the CD was $9, I'm in. Game.
Right.
But an MP3 download, $9, that kind of eked me.
Well, we're kind of running into also, you know, the price of MP3s and how much they're being sold on Amazon and iTunes has devalued the amount. Because I would say 10 years ago, if somebody's like, hey, you get the whole album here for $9, you'd be like, that's a freaking deal, you know? Because, I mean, at the time,
Here's the thing is I really don't have a problem if the album has 8 songs. I thought the album was perfect as 8 songs. I thought, you know, if there was like a B-side they would have thrown on it at the end. No, because the album has no filler. No. I don't think that album, it's straight. So instead of mucking it up with the filler song, I'm glad there's 8. And I would gladly pay the $9 for the 8 songs. But the precedent's been set. I just wish maybe someone else would have done it before. Why is Radiohead the first? You know, Radiohead was the first to charge less. Why are they now the first to charge more?
Well, I don't know. I mean, remember when Block Party did theirs? They essentially, you paid one flat amount to pre-order it. You got the album. And then when you actually got the physical album in the mail later, it had more songs.
Yeah.
But it was the third Block Party album, so you were like, I don't need that many more songs.
I mean, I feel like I owe Tom York money. I mean, I will gladly pay up. And I put in a couple of bucks, I know, for In Rainbows, too.
Okay.
You know, I feel like Tom York has given me some experiences over the years. You know what I mean? I know where I was for... Yeah, every Radiohead album, I can picture where I was, date and time, age, vehicle, the whole nine yards, where I was for Radiohead albums. So... I don't know. That was just one part where I was like, kind of like, really? Come on. You could have charged $8 and would have been just as rich.
Well, you know, I don't know. I didn't really have an issue. It seemed sensible to me.
I don't know. Don't Radiohead, don't humanize yourself because you were godlike.
All right. I was going to talk about the Strokes, but I really think I'm going to save our Strokes talk for when the album properly comes out. Or leaked, or whatever.
Which I got support. I have had people into my store, and we have talked, and I've listened again to the Strokes song, and I do enjoy it. I like it. I like it for what it is.
All right, because apparently our friend Lauren, who's been on the podcast before, she's heard the whole thing, and she also was psyched. She really liked the second single, which is admittedly, I thought, better than the first one. But she has apparently heard the whole album and she thought it was terrible. So, I don't know. I'm going to wait till the whole thing comes out and I can hear it.
Okay, but... love Lauren. Love Lauren. She's been on the podcast and I really hope Lauren's on the podcast again.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Albums that that Lauren praises out the gate.
Yes.
They have to involve a Z and a J somewhere in them in order for that to happen.
Well, you know, I mean...
Maybe she's a hove in the middle.
She's a woman of precise taste. Hey, she loves the first Strokes record, as we all do. So, but we'll say.
But did
that
she love it when it first came out? That's what I wonder.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Because I've noticed she comes around a lot, and then we'll listen to an album after.
She's going to be thrilled that we're talking about her right now. She has something I called. She tends to have a delayed reaction to things. So she didn't get into Arcade Fire until about a year and a half ago when she texted me and was like, I finally get it. And I was like, thanks for coming around. I'm going to be really excited when you get into all these other bands in 2015, you know, that you're dismissing at the moment.
I'm really excited, and I don't know why, but kind of excited because it's always an occasion. I know you mentioned we're going to have a review coming up of New Rival Schools as well.
Yes. I just got it in the mail today. I bought it. I bought the CD. I got the bundle pack. So I got the CD and a t-shirt. I've been wanting a Rival Schools t-shirt since 2001.
Wait,
and
is it the green with the...
It's not the green. It's black with the logo in the middle, the same Rival Schools logo with red lettering that says Rival Schools. It looks badass.
Rival Schools is one of the few bands where I think the logo may be cooler than the band.
Possibly. I mean, I love
like
that
Rival
first
Schools
album
a lot,
but
that having that shirt is gold.
Let me tell you, they have one of the best logos. They could be a total garbage band. I mean, this record, it could suck, but I'd be like, they still got the best fucking logo around.
I was at a Ben Queller concert in the early 2000s, and someone offered $35 for one of those t-shirts off a guy's back, and he wouldn't give it up.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the thing. I got into them, and I didn't seriously consider, like, hey, I should... Oh, I did want to buy one of their shirts off their website, but... Just to let you know how long ago this was, I did not have a credit card to purchase it. So that was what happened.
Did you go get a COD or a mail order?
I should have, in retrospect. I should have gotten a mail order.
Your mom had to drive you down?
Yeah, I should. Well, I had a car, man. Come on. I had a license. This wasn't 1997. This was 2001. I was 19 years old. So next podcast, which hopefully will not be prevented by illness, weather, or power outage.
We're trying to be good about this. There's forces at nature.
I will have a full – and I'll send it to you so you can hear it too. So we can talk about stuff that I have heard. This is always fun.
Yeah.
The new Does It Offend You Yeah record, which comes out officially next Tuesday. I've heard that. It's awful. And I listened to it twice, so I you know, really got.
They're such a band that, like, I heard that name, and it was Eagles of Death Metal all over again. Because you hear the name Eagles of Death Metal, you have an expectation. You hear "I Want You So Hard," and you go, "Yes, that is my expectation." You hear "Does It Offend You?" Yeah, you have an expectation. You hear it, and you go, "Oh, never mind."
Well, you know, I really like the first album. I can see why some people may dislike it, but hold on a second. I got a dog here. Hey! Okay. We'll cut that out. The first Does It Offend You Yeah record, I really liked it. It had Sebastian Granger appearance. It had a couple songs that were just spazzy, rapture-like dance rock tracks. It was all over the map. And it was really derivative, but it was a lot of fun. And I remember that was one of those bands where I was on the MySpace listening to the demos, downloading the alternate takes. I was all over that. Oh, so yeah. I had heard all the versions of the songs before they were even on the album, so I knew that the version of Doomed Now that was on the record was sped up in comparison to the demo that was leaked on the internet. I knew all about stuff. I was heavy. I guess I was a big Does It Offend You Yeah head for that one. So for this one, they took entirely too long to put this record out. I'm sorry. Like, this record should have come out a year ago. And when they were leaking singles, all they sounded like was less melodic versions of songs from the first album. And that's what the album is for the most part. It's a bad copy of the first record. It has a lot of the same things they did, but lesser. There's, you know, a more slowed down, more Brit rocky kind of track. Not as good as the song on the first album. It's got the spazzy screamer, jumping around versions of something like We Are Rock Stars, but not as good. I mean, the song's called, I think, like We Are the Dead. So it's not even a fully title change. And ultimately, it's just kind of dull, and it does the worst thing. It has a really boring sort of acoustic-y slow song as the last track. So,
really?
Yes. So on the last song, you're like, you know. You kind of bored.
I always thought they were just spat. Like, it just didn't. It just sounded like they were doing it to do it. Like, they were like, hey, like, they had the name first. They were like, okay, let's get this band called Does It Offend You Yet? And then we'll just be all spazzy and scream.
Yes.
And well, then I'm like, I don't know. The funny thing
is their live performances, I mean, I've never seen them live, but every time they've done a television performance, it's been immensely disappointing because they always looked unprepared and overwhelmed. I saw them on, I think it was Carson Daly, and they played a song that was mostly drum machine, so their drummer didn't know what to do. He literally looked lost. Like, I've got my drum set, but I don't really play in this song. And then they did Dawn of the Dead on Kimmel, and the lead singer either can't sing live or didn't want to and just sang the whole song in this bored atonal voice. And it was super disappointing. And they had people dressed up as zombies walking around on stage. Very disappointing performance. So really, the album just sounds like they ran out of ideas and just were just like, we'll be loud, we'll thrash around, we'll rip off ourselves, which was already ripoffs of something else. So, sorry guys. Can't really recommend that one. And like I said, I listened to it twice. So it wasn't like I listened to it and, you know, two times. There you go.
So next week, yeah, you can avoid Does It Offend You, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you can even find a store that sells music. Yeah.
That official ball less on here. I'm trying to keep this going here. Can you tell?
Yeah, I know you are. I don't know. I think I really liked it for a week, and now I'm like, can we go back to a star rating or something?
I just sense hesitation on your end.
I don't know.
It does sound a little immature, does it not?
I don't want to say it's immature, but that it's one of those things where I feel like if anyone's ever going to take us seriously, we have to have a less male centric thing, you know what I mean? Because women are inherently ballless, and I think women are great. So,
I can't argue with you there.
So when I thought of it that way, I was like, we need to have another rating system, maybe away from genitalia, something a little more concrete.
Yeah, because I always felt like ours, you know, ours could be enjoyed, you know, with a fine cup of espresso at the same time with, you know, just a cup of Folgers, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we're simple yet refined,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. I think that you and I have a bit more flow to us than the average podcast does.
There you
maybe.
Go. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, we're opinionated, but you know, we're also professional radio DJs.
There you
that
go.
Not.
Absolutely.
So you know, yeah, that's why. Yeah, I get what you mean about it being a little immature. But if any suggestions, again, we do have the Lauren and Fritz.
Lauren and Fritz podcast @gmail.com.
There it is. What else have we got? We got movies, right?
Movies. Well, let's talk about the colossal box office bomb that was Drive Angry 3D.
Was it a bomb?
It was a bomb.
Okay.
It came in at like number 9, made like $5 million for the weekend.
And I'll tell you why. I tell you why I was not in the seats, right?
Okay.
Because I am married to a film fanatic. My wife loves movies. We have a huge movie room. She loves going to the movies. It's one of her favorite things to do. And it's not much of a stretch to get my wife out of the house to go see a movie. Okay. Yes. That's child's play. But I said, hey, do you want to go see Drive Angry in 3D? Would not do it. She would not go. So I went to my other friend, Brad. Now, Brad is the lead singer of Infrastar. Just a little background on my friend Brad. Brad has never, ever, I think, seen a movie that he didn't like.
He's one of those people. Okay.
He's one of those guys that you can sit there and you can go, you know, I'm just trying to think of something that we can mutually both hate here, because all the movies I hate, I could think of ones that you like. You know, like he'll see the movie Kingpin and go, yeah, that was a laugh riot.
Well, I think Kingpin is a laugh riot.
So. Well, okay. Never mind. I'm trying to think.
He's the type of guy that like you and I could see a movie and you would be like, you know what? I thought it was kind of boring. And I could be like, you know what? It had a lot of script issues. I thought that the special effects were shoddy. And he'd be like, eh, it was fun. 2 hours. I don't mind. That type
yeah,
of guy.
I liked it.
I liked yeah. it. Whatevs. Yeah.
Exactly. He's like that. And we were over at his house and I go, hey, you know, fine then, Brad. You know, you and me, I'll go see Drive Angry 3D. And he literally looks at me and goes, eh, kind of bored with Nicolas Cage.
Whoa.
And this man loves National Treasure. He loves
How could
Gone
any
in 60 Seconds.
Oh, my God. See, you should have started with this. If anyone who loves National Treasure, you know what? I know there's a guy just like him in Pittsburgh. Because I was at work, and someone took a phone call, and I only caught the my side of the phone call. But it was basically, hello? Yes? Okay, let me check. We have it on DVD. Yep. Yeah. Okay, hold on 1 second. All right. I have it in my hand. I'm holding it. Okay, I'll hold it for you. What movie? Gone in 60 Seconds. Someone called in 2011 to the store and made sure that the DVD copy of Gone in 60 Seconds was there and also was being held for them.
You don't want that stuff to just, you know, get away from you. You,
you
know what
you,
I mean?
Well, you
that's,
know, constantly every day we have people lined up outside the store waiting to get in and buy a copy of Gone 60 Seconds on DVD. On DVD, not Blu-ray. No, DVD.
I'm actually shocked that Target had that in the first place, because I don't think Best Buy carries it.
Lord knows I've gone into Best Buy, and it's like, oh, you're looking for a movie made in 2005? You're going to have to go to the classics at some other store. We don't carry movies that old.
Oh, this literally happened. Yes.
I went there once. They didn't have, like, they had Blade Trinity, and they didn't have any other Blades. They didn't have a lot of stuff.
It's stupid. Yeah. Don't go to Best Buy for your movies. Yeah. Just don't. It's a terrible place to do so. Anyway,
the movie.
I thought that this movie was going, because I'm a car nut. I love cars.
Yes.
You know, I can tell you the difference between a Lamborghini Murcielago LP670-4, the difference between that and an LP640-2 Valentino Balboni edition.
Besides,
I know the exact details.
You can tell
exactly. I thought this was just going to be 3D. Nicolas Cage doing his. Was this a Disney film?
No. Oh, no. Okay.
Didn't think so. But, anyways, Nicolas Cage. I just thought it was going to be Nicolas Cage doing his unoffensive, mediocre thing while driving cars that are coming at you in 3D. Car chases in 3D. How can you go wrong?
Well, my main issue is that I've seen a decent amount of Nicolas Cage movies. I actually like Nicolas Cage a lot because he, in his really good movies, is an unpredictable force of nature. And he can do anything if he sets his mind to it. But he's on autopilot in this movie. He looks bored. He manages to make a scene where he blows off a guy's hand with a shotgun and then blows off the other guy's leg. And he makes it seem like somebody who's emptying the dishwasher or something. He just sucks the life out of the scenes.
And I thought that's what he's always done, but no, that's just me personally.
No, I mean, if you see him in Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, dude's insane in that movie. Just crazy. All off the wall. Just wackadoo. And I was hoping for that Nicolas Cage, and we didn't get that. He just looked kind of tired. At one point, he gets shot in the face and is essentially dead for a moment. And then he just kind of gets up and looks in the mirror like, oh, somebody shot me in the eye. Okay. It just completely ineffectual. And then the other hand is just these type of movies, which are over-the-top, ridiculous, violent gore fests.
And I thought it was just car chase.
People getting run over by cars. Like I said, Nicolas Cage shooting off people's hands.
This movie is sounding better as you're describing it, not worse, Lauren.
No, but it's still, it's not crazy enough. It has shitty performances, which in a movie like this, you can sometimes let it slide, but I don't know what they were going for, but they didn't pull it off. It just seemed kind of half-assed. And you really, with a movie like this, you need to be committed to your premise. You need to have your actors committed to your premise. And your dialogue either has to be really awful or really great. You can't be in between. And in this movie, the dialogue just tended to be kind of blah, kind of shitty villain. That's another one. If you're going to have a villain, he's got to be, you know, you got to kind of think he's kind of awesome in his villainy. The villain in this really sucked. I read after the fact he's like the dad in the Twilight movies.
I'm glad you didn't know that. But I thought you've seen Twilight.
I've seen Twilight. He looks completely different. And actually,
Sunlight, I see.
It might be a case of where he's a better actor than we know, and that the person who directed Drive Angry was actually made him a worse actor, because there's a guy.
Well, I mean, let's just for a second. I mean, just I hate to talk about Twilight here for too long, but Twilight, I would never ever say that anyone who's in Twilight is a bad actor.
Really? Really?
I mean, I haven't seen. Oh. I haven't seen many of their other works either.
Okay. Well.
So I'm just saying that just based on being in Twilight, just because Twilight, I think, kind of sucks. I think the storyline, the premise, the whole thing is kind of dumb, but I've always thought vampires were kind of dumb, even you know, Interview with a Vampire, I thought was kind of dumb, but that's just me personally. I don't know. So I would say that there could be some gold to come out of Twilight just because it's a tweeny flick. You know what I mean? They're making buttloads.
If you've seen the first one, which is the only one I've seen.
Which I haven't.
Okay. Robert Pattinson is a bad actor. He's very bad in it. And Kirsten Stewart is also very bad in it. And they have negative chemistry, which apparently to the audience that loves it is chemistry. So I don't know what they would do if they saw a couple with actual chemistry. They'd be like, why are those people not bursting into flame? They have so much chemistry. But anyway. Okay. But in the Twilight movie, the dad is not bad. He just plays a dad. He's got like a funny line, which I remembered because it's like the only funny line in the whole fucking movie. But in Drive Angry 3D, he's this really terrible like cult leader, but he's not funny. And he's got long, terrible speeches that aren't funny. And yeah, and here's the thing. You can recover from a bad villain in a movie by having a good hero. Like Sherlock Holmes. Robert Downey Jr. is very entertaining in that movie, as is Jude Law. But the guy who's the villain, he's not that good in it.
Yeah.
There you go. Definitely. He's kind of boring. Like his scenes happen, you're like, I don't get away from it. But in Drive Angry, the villain scenes kind of suck, and Nicolas Cage is just asleep the whole time. There's a scene where he's having sex with a woman while also engaged in a shootout. Sounds awesome, right? Not really. It's kind of blah. It already been done in Shoot 'Em Up, which that's not a very good movie either. But at least in that movie, it was the benefit of Clive Owen.
You just said that way too nonchalantly.
What?
So Nicolas Cage is just sleeping. There's a scene while he's having sex while having a shootout, and it's just kind of boring.
Yes. That's
how. I need to see this movie just to realize how that's possible.
It's you sit there and like it's like this scene should be exhilarating. And
how
I
many 3D sex scenes have there been?
I don't know.
Rachel, is it 3D movies?
How many 3D sex scenes have there been? Does Avatar count?
I mean, is she topless?
In Drive Angry?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, she's completely naked.
So nudity in 3D. Okay. That's
kind of... That's what I'm saying. This movie should rule. I should have come home and grabbed people and said, Drive Angry 3D is the new awesome movie. But it's not. It just fails.
I don't know. Everything you just keep saying is blowing my mind. No. You have to be there.
You know, here's the one good thing. The one good thing in the movie is William Fichtner. William Fichtner is really great. Do you know who he is?
No.
He's in like a lot of Michael Bay stuff. He's in Armageddon.
Transformers?
He's in Contact. I don't think he's in Transformers. But he plays this guy who's come from hell to bring Nicolas Cage back to hell. And
so he's from hell again. This just keeps getting better.
And
I thought he was just a mortal earthling.
No,
a demon.
And he has a bunch of really great lines. He's the only person who looks like they're really having a lot of fun in the movie. And about halfway through, he has this scene that should be awesome, which fits the trend of the movie, where he drives a Mack truck of nitroglycerin or something into a bunch of cop cars. And the CGI sucks so bad that it's not even like, we knew it's going to suck. No, it just looks really bad.
Because they don't have 3D CG yet. You know,
no,
still
no, I don't think that. It wasn't even a 3D issue. It was very clear that he was on a blue screen and not actually in a car. And he also his character the whole time you feel like, okay, he's doing like a T-1000 thing, like nothing can stop him, you know? And then about halfway through he's sort of like becomes nice and teams up with Nicolas Cage, and it just took the whole grit, any level of grit that was still left in the movie. It was just like, this is ridiculous. Like everybody from hell is super nice, I guess. I mean, and that's the other thing. It's called Drive Angry. Nicolas Cage never seems that mad at all. And which strikes me as like a stupid thing to say about the movie, but at this point, it's like, it's not even truth in advertising. Like, it's more like drive irritated, you know? And, no one.
So you're mad just because he didn't drive that angry.
Yeah, well, it's called Drive Angry, and I'm thinking, and the premise is he drove out of hell to kill this guy, you know? And instead, he's like, you know, just kind of sleepily driving around. And there's too many action sequences in it where no one seems that concerned about what's happening. So,
I don't know. If you slightly changed the inflection on your voice in that review, it would be the best movie ever made.
Yeah, absolutely. But
I'm going to hate Nicolas Cage either way because I hated National Treasure. I've never seen a good Nicolas Cage film except for I Will Give You Credit because wasn't he in Face Off?
Yeah, he's in Face Off, but you're also forgetting, okay, good action trash from Nicolas Cage, Con Air, Adaptation.
It's been a while. What?
Adaptation. Love Adaptation. He's amazing in that. It's not an action movie, but he's great in it. Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. I'm telling you, dude's on fire in that movie. He's threatening old ladies. He's getting, I think he banged somebody in a.
You tried to do this last week, and I still, I haven't seen these movies, and I don't want to because I want to hate him.
I'm just telling you, it's, you know,
he makes devil driving, sex gunfights while smashing into nitroglycerin boring. Then yeah, I'm gonna hate this man.
It's not all him. It's the script too. The script too fails a lot because William Fichtner is there for a while, and then I think they fuck him up. They didn't do the villain right. Oh, and I can't forget Amber Heard. You know Amber Heard?
Yeah, she was actually on Top Gear, I believe.
Okay.
My British motoring show.
Yeah, well, she's super hot in this movie. Yep. It's insane. Yep. She's super hot. But her character is just one mode, and they don't really do anything with it. And so I was bored with her. That's the thing. Because I was thinking about it. I was like, you know, saying she's a one-note character in this movie. I mean, Lord knows I've seen action movies with Steven Seagal and Jason Statham that were full of a one-note stuff. But this one just felt extra rote. And there were just, you know, I mean, there was not really any stakes. Like, Nicolas Cage gets shot in the eye and then doesn't die. And then at the end of the movie, the bad guy's, like, hitting him with a shovel. But I'm like, he survived a bullet in the face. He's going to walk off this shovel beating. It's going to be okay.
Well, you know, that would weaken you. You know what I mean? You could still be.
Yeah,
you know.
But I just sat there and I'm like, I mean, I guess I should say it wasn't the worst thing I'd ever seen. You know, it wasn't a Boondock Saints 2 or anything like that, you know, which was.
Wasn't that gay.
Oh, what a terrible movie that is. But it's more just like a missed opportunity. Some moments are cool. Like I said, William Fichtner has a couple pretty good bits. But ultimately, it wasn't a good movie. You know? So if you want to see something that's over the top, crazy, awesome, Crank 2 is still the high watermark for that. That is the barometer. That's a barometer I will always base all crazy. Oh my God, he drove out of hell to kill people. Okay.
See, and that's the same, but that's a dangerous thing to get into because that's like me basing all my Radiohead albums off of Kid A. You know what I mean? It's just going to be dangerous. You're just going to lead yourself up to disappointment, Lauren.
Yeah, I guess so. But at the same time, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I've been watching.
The man fell out of a plane and lived.
Well, the funny thing is, I've been watching, you know, Steven Seagal movies lately. I haven't watched any lately, but those movies have a tone that is consistent and is ridiculous and trashy, but they tend to be good all the way through, unless you're talking about Fire Down Below, which is a fucking mess, but still has some redeeming qualities, and I would definitely recommend that over Drive Angry 3D because... just for the ending scene.
But you only have that feeling because you read the book. You need to read that book in order to have those feelings. Your Steven Seagal book.
I guess. But
because if you just plop down with no preface whatsoever.
I think Out for Justice would stand up even without. Out for Justice is that good.
You're watching the man's whole body of work now.
Yeah, trust me. It's not like I'm going back to, you know, revisit Exit Wounds. That's necessary. I sat through Exit Wounds once, never again. Anyway, all right. I think we got time for one more thing, and that is Tron Legacy. Did you see Tron Legacy?
Absolutely not.
Did you see the original Tron?
I despise Tron. I hated the original Tron. Okay. I hated the fat guy on the internet when he was wearing the stupid Tron suit.
Okay.
There's nothing about... I didn't like the Atari video game. I didn't like the stupid pod racer thing where they had to go... and they only went in right angles and then they had to blow each other. I hated that movie. Wait,
and then they had to blow each other? I have not seen that game. That is Skype a version of Tron I have never seen. That might be the greatest Freudian slip.
It was called Tron Leggy. That's what that was called.
All right.
I can't think of a good porno name for that, but whatever.
All right. Well,
anyways. No, I hate Tron, and I will not watch Tron Legacy even out of a goof because I hated the first one that bad.
Okay. Well, Tron Legacy is neither as bad as I had heard nor as good as some people tried to make it seem. It's perfectly right in the middle of mediocre in that it's really derivative of the first Tron, of The Matrix Reloaded, of Star Wars. I mean, you just pick a scene and you're like, oh, this is a ripoff of Matrix Reloaded. And, oh, this is a ripoff of Star Wars. And this is just the first movie.
Don't tell me there was bullet time.
Well, everybody has bullet time. There's a fight where they slow it down and a guy dodges a disc. But I mean, I've seen that so much that I don't even associate that with the Matrix. I'm just like, that's what people do.
They just did that so they can make an Xbox game out of it.
But no, the Matrix ripoff is there's a fight where they go to a bar because it's a computer. So there's a bar. I don't know. That's a whole other problem I have with this. But
I like putting those two together.
But. Yeah, I know. Yeah. You know what this computer needs? A bar. But no, they go there and they run into Michael Sheen. And he's playing a variation on, I would say, a mix between the Merovingian from Matrix Reloaded and only in a thematic way, but not in actual any literal way. Lando Calrissian. So they go in, they talk to him. He's all like, welcome to my bar. I'm your buddy. Psych, I'm not your buddy. Fight scene. And but the fight's not that impressive. You know, I mean, most of the stuff in there is like, I mean, there's a fight early on and all it is a scene from the first movie, but with better special effects. And like I
didn't know who really liked the first one. Like the only reason why I felt that movie got made is because the 80s were back. You know what I mean? Black Eyed Peas started wearing Casio keyboards and skinny ties came back in. So they're like, let's make Tron.
I don't know why. Because when I watch it, I'm thinking, well, the first Tron's still not that good. They took it off the market before this one came out. So people didn't watch it and go, whoa, you made a sequel to this?
Well, they said, okay, well, let's remake. Let's redo Hollow. Oh, wait a minute. Let's redo Friday the... Oh, wait. Let's redo Piranha. Oh, wait. Let's redo... You know what I mean? You can go so far down the list, and eventually, you're going to get into the crappy movies. Now...
Yeah. I mean, it's... The thing that kind of kills me is that they didn't try to make a new story. They just basically remade the same movie again. And
well, you had to because the first one sucked so hard.
Well, yeah, but that's my thing. If the first one sucked so hard, why make it again? Why not make a variation on it? And instead, they just, you know, or add to it. They just made the same movie again and then took parts of other movies. Because you even have a scene where...
that's a winning formula.
Well, no, you have a scene where there's like a guy and you don't know who he is. And then you find out that he's actually like somebody you thought was dead. And then he's the villain, but then he has a change of heart for no apparent reason.
It all goes back to Star Wars.
Yeah, it's well, that's the thing. And the end of the movie is like, well, that my main thing is that if you think about Tron, and especially Tron Legacy, doesn't make any sense. And I mean that in not in a way of like, like
most,
you know,
arcade
like,
galleries don't have a hole in the back that suck you into a mystical world.
Okay, once you get sucked in that mystical world, why do the programs need gladiator game entertainment? Why do they need bars? What are they drinking? Why is there water? Why is there air? What food is Jeff Bridges eating since he's stuck in this game for 20 years?
They're computers. They have YouTube. What more do they need?
I don't know. They don't even talk about YouTube in this movie.
They're pirating themselves. They can just pirate movies endlessly.
It doesn't make any sense. And just on top of that, the main guy, he's not a very interesting character. Oh, this is one of my favorite parts. The very beginning of the movie, you find out that Jeff Bridges' company that he ran in the first movie is now run by other people. And the movie wants us to know, these people that run it now, they're dicks. They're not cool. They're bad people. Why are they bad people? Well, they made this software, and now they have the audacity, Fritz, to want to sell it to consumers. Not give it away, but sell it. So you actually have a scene where this guy, they had, I can only imagine what the direction was. Because you could have taken his dialogue and had it delivered a different way, and it would be like Steve Jobs. Like saying, hey, here's a new thing. But they have this guy deliver it.
He came out yelling and fist pumping like the Windows guy.
No. they basically have this guy deliver this speech to his other people, basically that's like, We made this software, and now we're going to fucking charge him for it. And this other guy's like, really, we should give it away for free. And everyone's like, no, why would we do that? Why would we give it away for free?
Isn't uTorrent, man. What are you talking about?
And then what's his name? The main guy. I'm going to call him what's his name because, I don't know, Flynn, whatever. Yeah. Is it Flynn? Thank you, Rachel. Rachel's telling me what the characters' names are. He hacks the computer and gives the world this new program. And everyone's all mad about it. But we're supposed to be like, yeah, piracy. Really?
That's the story of Napster and iTunes, apparently.
I don't know. It didn't make any sense to me.
World gave us Napster and all was well, and then no, iTunes comes around, and we were all pissed because they're making us pay for it.
Yeah, it was really weird. The only good thing in the whole movie that I actually felt something about is the very, very end of the movie. They get out of the Tron world, and they're riding. It's the Flynn guy and Olivia Wilde, who's a computer program, but now she's in the real world, so apparently she's a real person, and she's going to discover about shitting and everything soon, but that part hasn't happened yet. So she's just on this motorcycle, and they're driving through, I think, it looks like Seattle, you know, upper northwest.
You never want to give your 20-year-old girlfriend a copy of Everybody Poops.
Yeah, you don't want that. It's very true. that's in the extended cut, I'm sure, as he explains eating and shitting. Welcome to the real world. You're gonna have this sensation. Yeah. So, but they're driving through, and you see the forest, you see the city, you see the real world, and she has this look on her face of awe, like, wow, this is amazing. My conception of my existence has changed forever.
No, she just got her first period, that's all.
She just got her first period. Okay, that's possible too. But it's this overwhelming sense of awe. And it's in literally the last 30 seconds of the movie, and then it goes to black. And through the whole rest of the movie, this Flynn guy, who has had his entire understanding of his existence changed by being sucked into a computer and forced to fight in gladiator games, and he's all like, hey, you guys, this isn't cool. Not, my whole existence is fucking crazy. What? No. So, that bugs me. But the last 30 seconds, I will totally vouch for. And you made
it's
a very good point.
It. It's not worth it, man. It's not worth it.
No, you've made the point that she is totally going to have to learn about shitting. I don't think anyone – I think it's the first time anyone has pointed that out.
That's the worst plot hole to figure out.
The only other thing, the Tron Legacy is the second movie I've seen where there's a fight scene and there is an actual DJ in the room, in this movie Daft Punk, who basically puts on a track for the fight. And just like in Iron Man 2, it's the worst. So, basically Daft Punk are in this nightclub, and Michael Sheen's like, drop a beat for this fight. And they nod, as Daft Punk is known to do, and then they drop a beat. There's actually earlier in that scene, Michael Sheen says to Daft Punk, why don't you amp it up in here a little bit? And Daft Punk nod, and they hit a button, and you can tell they're about to drop a jam, and they cut to a different room where there's no music. It's amazing.
Disney
in that
sucks.
Oh, man. Yeah. So I don't want to say – I don't want to end on this downer note, but we have to. That's all we got.
The Grammy sucked. We had lots of health and problems in our lives. Radiohead's good, though.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So there you go. Summation. Radiohead,
just
still good.
Go put on Radiohead and chill.
There you go.
Just chill.
There you go.
That's all you got to do.
All right.
Lauren Frist Podcast.
Lauren Frist Podcast. See you later.